Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
So anyway, they get there, they hand the judge the verdict form. He's flipping through the pages like really fast, like this, because he's got to do all my pages and he's got to do all the prince's pages. And you can tell it something was up. And he hands it back to the clerk. We the jury, the above entitled action, blah, blah, blah. As to count one, deprivation of civil rights, you know, civil code XYZ, da, da, da. We the jury find the defendant, Chad Kenneth Jensen.
Hey gang, welcome back to part two of this week's episode with Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. We're talking to Chad Jensen, a 24-year veteran of the Pomona, California Police Department, who was so erroneously and egregiously prosecuted by the FBI. It just makes me want to throw up. Again, as we said yesterday, this is not a dig on the Federal Bureau of Investigation itself. It's just a couple of agents who are, I'm trying to be real nice talking about them. They were very overzealous and underqualified for what they were doing, and I certainly hope they're still not on the job. But, you know, sometimes it's the old saying, screw up, move up. I don't know if that's true or not. But so as we left it yesterday, Chad, they've been through their first trial, federal trial, and the jury came back deadlocked. They polled the jury. The count was 11-1. Of course, our guys thought that was for acquittal. Turns out it was for a guilty plea. So I can't imagine the stress that created in everybody's life, because and we talked a little bit about the judge. He had a lot to do with this thing, whole thing being skewed by not allowing the jurors to read reports and make decisions for themselves. I think that's a slap in the face to all the jurors, because he thinks that they're not smart enough to understand what they're reading. But as they're going into trial two here, they're at the jury selection. And I highlighted one passage in this book from one of the prospective jurors. And when you go to jury duty, they call you one by one and they ask you a series of questions. And remember, this event took place at the Los Angeles County Fair. And this middle-aged female, she's sitting in the front row, far right. When my attorney asked her if she'd ever been to the LA County Fair, she said, "Are you kidding? Yes, I've been there and I'll never go back. It's full of gang members and fights and violence. The Pomona police, though, they were always very professional and they were very nice." And I can just see the prosecutors jumping out of their chairs going, "Shut her up. Be quiet. Oh, objection, objection." I mean, just going crazy. Is that what happened, Chad?
Absolutely. You would have thought that she got hit with a cattle prod. The prosecutor literally, it was kind of like right out of like the TV, like Law and Order, where they get up and they put their hands out on the table. "Your Honor, Your Honor." And he even, like, you talk about whiplash from his neck, because most of the time he's looking down. He looked up and looked right at her. "Objection, objection." Both the prosecutors jumped out of their seats. "Objection, objection." And then the judge says, after they dismiss her, the judge basically says, "Okay, jury, disregard everything she said." Well, you know what that does? Because then everybody's like, "Whoa, what did she say?" So inadvertently, he didn't mean to do that, but he absolutely brought a highlight to what she said. So,
oh, absolutely. And now the jurors will forget everything else that happened, but that one thing.
Yes, 100%. Yep, absolutely. So that was where the Lord was looking for us. Yeah.
Yeah. So we mentioned in yesterday's episode that the prosecutors hit you guys 2 days before the first trial with between 30 and 40,000 pages of discovery documents. Somewhere along the line there, somebody told you about, did you see those two reports, those two one-page reports?
Right.
And just tell us about that. What were those reports?
Those reports were FBI 302s. FBI 302 is an interview form. Basically, anytime an agent interviews anybody, could be a subject, could be a witness, could be victim, anything, they record it on an FBI 302 form. Okay. It's a standard issue form. And then they just fill it out, whether it's handwritten or typed on a Word document or whatever. But those two 302s were of the two cousins. When I arrived on scene that night at the fair and we're pushing everybody back, and there was three people together, right? One, two, three. The suspect, and then the other two were with him. So the three of them, turns out one was the suspect's brother and one was the suspect's cousin. Okay. So those two stopped. When we said stop, they stopped. Knucklehead kept going. Okay. So those two were interviewed by the FBI. The FBI comes in, they interview these guys, and then they are supposed to now provide the defense those documents, right? Because inside of those reports, both the cousin and the brother paint a completely different picture than they testified to at the federal trial. Because remember, by the time you get to the federal trial, the first trial, they've been coached. The DOJ prosecutor's like, oh, it'd help if you sniffed a little bit like you're crying or this or that. And so when they came into the first trial, even the suspect, the little turd, he was acting very meek and very victimish on cue. And that's what they're supposed to do. So the victim's cousin, or the kid's cousin and brother, got up there, testified, oh, I don't remember, but I think the officer was out of control. And I think I was scared and blah, 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 blah. And this guy didn't do anything wrong. My brother didn't do anything wrong, X, Y, Z. So when the first trial ended, we still hadn't found those 302s in that 40,000 pages, right? So we didn't know they existed. So then we get preparing for the second trial, which is now going to occur in the second week of January, right? So we prepare over the Christmas holiday. I'm in there. Now I'm really buckling down. Like, our defense expert is now on board, and because they didn't allow the defense expert in the first trial, right? So we're thinking they'll let him in the second trial. Silly us. So anyway, I'm in there preparing to testify, because you're looking at a 40-year prison sentence and you just had 11-1 for guilty. You might think about throwing it out there and testifying, because think about it, right? If you know, the old William Wallace, right? Many years from now, lying in your beds, what would you give to have one chance to fight for your freedom? So prepared during this 2.5 months, we still didn't find those 302s, right? We didn't find them. We didn't know they existed. So we went back now, as I said before yesterday, we switched and went on offense. We got off of defense. We now started going on offense, which means that all the information that was used to indict me, meaning the feds said that I was never, that the guy, the suspect, was never close enough to the officer's back to create a hazard. They're saying that this distance, officer's back here and suspect, was 100 feet. And I'm like, no, it was under 30 feet. So she goes in, testifies to the grand jury. Oh, I was like 100 feet. Nah, da, 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 da. Well, no wonder. Then that would make my actions inappropriate, right? Because if you're a quarter mile down the road and I grab you, well, then that's inappropriate. There's no necessity for me to do that action. So she goes in, she tells the grand jury that it's 100 feet, blah, blah, blah. And then after the grand jury issues the indictment, Quantico, Virginia sends back a notification to that agent that says that, oh, hey, Agent XYZ, yeah, your 100-foot measurement's impossible. Given the landmarks at the fair, immovable objects, that measurement is impossible. Please go back and try again. So she goes back second time. They go out to the fairplex. They get their measurements. They come back. Okay, 60 feet. Sends it off because they want to get detailed diagrams from Quantico, right? So Quantico sends back another email that says, Agent XYZ, unfortunately, that measurement is impossible due to immovable objects at the fair. Please go measure again. So she then goes back and she goes between, like, I can't remember right now, but I want to say like 30 or 40 feet or whatever. And then Quantico sends it back. Okay, yeah, now everything mathematically makes sense. Here we go. So that was a big, you can't tell the grand jury one thing and then find out that that's incorrect and not go back and correct it, because that's what you use to indict me, right? So we keyed on that. We keyed on the redactions. Redactions were just, they were comical. It was when you put up a report and it's got 37 lines on it, but 34 are blacked out. How can you, as a prosecutor, hold that up and think to yourself, I kind of look like a boob right now, because everybody's going to go, what's behind the black lines? And there's only so many times that as a prosecutor, you can go, well, you don't need to worry about what's behind the lines, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I could understand if it was somebody's birth date that was blacked out, or their last name or something, or social security number or some identifier. I get that. So we keyed heavily on that in the preparation, right? And so then we're getting ready. We go to trial, and middle of January, I can't remember, like the 19th or something like this, or 11th, but we go to the second trial. Jury selection comes, right? And there's our girl. I'll never go back to the fair. It's crazy. She was in there, and man, it just kind of felt different in the courtroom this time. It kind of just felt like there was a little electricity and that things were looking up for us, because we're now on the offense. And so they impanel a jury. They go, first day of testimony comes about, second day of testimony comes about, and it's the cousin and the brother of the subject at the fair that night, right? They testify. Mike Niederbommer, my IA sergeant, who was also indicted with me, had bifurcated from our case, meaning it was just me and Prince on trial, and he had a separate trial date, and his wasn't until April. He didn't come to our first trial because, like me and Prince, this was a no-brainer. This is stupid. I mean, this is a waste of everybody's time. So when it came back 11-1 for guilty, he was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to the next trial. I'm going to go see what is up, because there's something screwy here. So he goes to this trial. First day, sits through testimony. Second day, sits through testimony from the brother and the cousin, right? In his packet of 40,000 documents that got dropped on the same day mine did before the first trial, they got documents that same day for his trial. He read through all 40,000 pages from October, November when he got it, up until our first trial. He read through all those through the holidays. He read through all that. So he knew those 302s existed. So at the end of trial, on the second day into testimony, he stands up in the gallery and he waves over to me, because we had kind of like, it wasn't a no contact order, but decorum states that we can't be seen together. And like our attorney said, it would be a middle finger to the FBI and the DOJ if you two talk. Okay. Which I get it. You want to play nice, but.
But you're ready to flip him off.
This is my freedom. So anyway, Mike steps up in the thing. He waves me over. He goes, real quick, where are the 302s? Where are the documents of the brother and cousin that just testified today? I said, I don't know. I've never heard of them. He goes, 302s exist. Have your attorney call me tonight. Boom. Take off. He takes off. And then my attorney ends up calling me and we talk, and I was like, hey, Niederbommer says that these documents exist. All right, what's his phone number? So he calls him, they get documents. And then the next morning, my attorney comes in and he says, man, I am so sorry we didn't see these documents. I had four clerks and both of my attorney and my co-counsel going through these documents. And 40,000 pages is a lot of pages. So sorry we didn't find it. I'm like, Michael, don't even worry about it. We got it now. Let's run with it. So they end up coming. We get our chance. I think somehow we're able to recall the brother and the cousin, right? So we call them up for like recross or whatever it was, or redirect or whatever that terminal terms are. And we now have these 302 documents, right? So the standard attorney thing is going to go, hey, do you remember that? You testified just the other day about being at the fair and that the officer was kind of out of control and he scared you and when you were scared for your cousin and da, da, da. Do you remember talking about that? Oh, yeah, yeah, I do. So that's how you remember it, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. Well, Your Honor, I'd like to submit this document here, which is an FBI 302 form that was provided during discovery. I'd like to enter it in evidence, hands it up to the judge. Judge looks at it, stiff lip, he's mad. So then, okay, so submitted, put it up on the overhead, right? And now this kid is looking at his, what he told the FBI agents in that interview, right? So it's not roses and cotton candy, like he said. Basically, he told the FBI investigators, yeah, my cousin was acting like an asshole. I saw him interfere with the arrest, blah, 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 all this crazy stuff. So impeached his testimony. Ended up calling the brother up there, brother, same thing, impeached his testimony, right? So that was two good swings on our game, right? So we got two good things in here. So then we're feeling good. Now they're going to interview, or the testimony is going to come from the defense attorney from the state trial. Okay. That guy is going to come in here and testify as to what I said at the state trial for the 148 against the juvenile. Okay. So he comes up there and he's Mr. Rock and Roll, Slick Rick, detective. He was the quintessential LA douchebag attorney. Okay. When you think of douchebag attorney, this is him 100%. Right. So I appreciated that he was such a freaking scuzzbag looking dude. Cause it just, you look at him and he just oozes grossness. Right. So he gets up there, he testifies, and they're the better part of a day, 2 or 3 hours. They're going over these redaction, these things that are putting up there. They put up this redacted one. What's that word say? Okay, right there. And blah, blah, blah. They just don't even talk about the redactions. It's like as the elephant in the room, they just don't talk about it. So they're going through that. And then they're kind of getting to the end of his testimony. And the lead prosecutor for the DOJ says, at any time, did Corporal Jensen attempt to add anything to his testimony or explain his actions that night or provide any clarity as to why he acted in the manner he did? And no. I'm sitting there in the defendant's chair. What the heck? I looked at my co-counsel. I said, did you hear that? She goes, what? What? You know, court's still going on. And I look over to my attorney. Hear that? He goes, what? Because, I mean, granted, you know how it is. It's death by a million cuts in trial sometimes because it's so monotonous. They didn't hear it, but I heard it, man. I know what I heard. And he just freaking perjured himself because I have 150 pages of testimony that I explained everything that night. So he steps down. We ask for a recess. We go back to the back room and I tell my attorneys and my partner's attorneys are in there. I'm like, did you guys hear him say, when she asked him, did Jensen provide any clarity or further explanation as to why he did what he did that night? And he said, no, that is an absolute lie. And I know I heard that. No part of our group heard that. Nobody. Not either attorney for him, nor him, or neither one of my attorneys. And you talk about my attorney kind of just looking me in the eye and he goes, Chad, listen, if you heard that, that's great. We'll go with it. But if you are wrong, okay, and you're trying to imply that a board certified attorney who was just testifying right now, board certified attorney is lying and you're wrong, you're done. Your goose will be cooked. So you got to be sure you're right. I said, Michael, I know what I heard. I heard him say it. So we go back in. Oh, then they ask Prince and Prince looks at me and he goes, did you hear it? And I go, Prince, I heard it 100%. Okay, cool. So we go back in there. We sit down. Recall this attorney guy back up there, that defense attorney, put him on the stand. My attorney, they lay good groundwork. Right now, you were just testifying moments ago. This is that, this and that. And then she asked you a question about clarity or further testimony. Or was there anything that Jensen may have offered in explanation? Any of that? No. Oh, fucking yeah.
this, dude.
and it was just like, it was the heavens parted, brother. I'm telling you, the heavens parted. It was the first time that this weight started to come off my shoulders a little bit. So then, and Michael Schwartz is, he's outstanding. So was Stuart Adams, Prince's attorney. These guys were stars. So of course they set him up with the whole thing. And then he brings up page 89 of my state trial transcripts where I absolutely lay out every single thing from when I'm reaching into his waistband, he jerks back like this. Of course, that was all redacted. So when we hand page 89 to the bailiff, takes it up to the judge. The judge looks at it and you can see disappointment in his face. He was just so mad. And so he says, very well, so submitted evidence item number 12. So then we put this sucker up on the overhead. And now that attorney looks, it completely impeached his testimony. Completely. And what was nice is that the whole exchange between the judge and our attorneys was so painful because the judge was so mad and just that's what brought attention to it, to where if he would just said, yeah, sure, go ahead. Half of the people on the jury are asleep. So nobody would have even noticed. But thankfully, again, the Lord reaching down his hand and manipulating this to make the truth come out. And so sure enough, we impeached it. And then page 89 is great. So then we go on. There's like three key pages, like 89, 127, and like 144, right? So then my attorney brings up, Your Honor, we'd like to introduce page 127 of the unredacted copy, hands it up to the judge. Judge goes, denied. Your Honor, it goes to further impeaching this witness's testimony because my client offered copious amounts of explanation as to why what occurred that night occurred. Denied. Your Honor, can we blah, 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 move on? That's exactly what he said.
Oh,
dude. And you want to talk about, I'm so glad I got bolted to my chair because I wanted to just jump up and scream because this dude's sitting here doing this with your life, man. And it's nothing to this guy. And so anyway, we just rolled with page 89. And again, that exchange between we want 127 in and he's saying, no, now you've piqued the interest of the jury and the jury starting to pay attention now. It's like my attorney said, well, we just want to expose what the federal government's hiding. You can't just cherry pick statements out of here and redact everything else. You need the whole story because it provides color for what occurred that night. So anyway, that was a just absolute gold. And finally the truth partially came out. And, so that was towards the end. We had a couple more, people that testified. We actually utilized the prosecution's witness that they didn't call. They had a telephone or a cellular expert, a paneled, FBI guy that is a cellular expert, right? So he comes up there. There was two videos at the fair that night that were submitted. There was one that the kid had, he was recording and you can hear me come up behind him and say, hey, would you guys come over here? Blah, 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 blah. Or step over this way or step over here, something like that. You can hear me say that. And then the other one is the one that's taken by a stranger out in the group where once the violence begins. So between the kid's video and the stranger video, there's a 23 second gap, right? So we exploited that 23 seconds. What do you think Corporal Jensen was doing for that 23 seconds? I'm trying to calm him down. I'm trying to be reasonable. You hear me on the kid's audio on his cell phone. Hey, can you guys step over? I wasn't some jerk cop. I'm not doing any of that. It's just because I didn't want any problems. I wanted to go home. So anyway, that 23 second point that we pointed that 23 second gap out really helped. You know, at the end of this, some of the jurors were saying, hey, that provided some clarity to me as to what the totality of the circumstance was.
And that's what they're supposed to get is the totality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, the defense rests, prosecution rests, it goes to the jury. How long is the jury out this time?
Well, sorry, say again, I covered you.
How long were they out for deliberations?
Oh, my goodness gracious. They were out probably 2 days, I think. Yeah, 2 days and some change. And there was a couple of time, they had a couple questions. I mean, like at the end of the first day of deliberation, they sent a question up. And because you come into the courtroom, because when the jury sends a note to the judge, everybody has to appear, come back in court. So we all came back in court. The judge reads the notes. Jury foreperson says, we would like the unredacted copies of the state trial transcripts from May of 2016. Judge says, okay, well, they are not admitted as evidence and therefore will not be provided. Wow. Wow. At least it made your heart feel good to know that these people, hold on, I just hit my thing, that this jury is at least thinking in the right direction. Not like the first jury was all just smoke, mirrors, and emotion. They never looked at the evidence. So, he doesn't give them that. So then we go back out and we're just doing laps around the foyer out in the courthouse. And, then we get a, notification that there's another question. And now the judge had said when we broke for lunch, the judge said, hey, if we're not going to get anything by like, say 2:30, we're just going to cut and we'll come back Monday. Okay. So, because there was a Dodger game that night and the judge wanted to make it for the Dodger game, right? So,
priorities.
And I'm not, that's the truth. So, we go back down, we're sitting there, we're waiting. 2 o'clock comes around. Oh my gosh, man. We're going to come back here Monday. I know it now. And then all of a sudden, I see Nicole Pafari, who was my co-counsel. She was my co-counsel on my case. She was like a former Montana trooper, right? And she's a taller female lady, and she's funny as hell, dude. I freaking loved her. I see her over in the corner like this. She's on the phone. Guys, we got to go. We got a question. Okay, cool. All right, cool. So let's go up. It's going to be another question. We get up there. And as I'm walking in the foyer of the courtroom, right, where all the benches are, I'm walking in. Michael Schwartz, my attorney, is walking towards me. And he comes up to my face and he said, Chad, it's a verdict.
Oh,
dude, I just like chills up and down your body, man, because this is completely unexpected and you have no idea. And the harsh part of it is the reality of it. No matter what happens, if this is guilty, I'm never going home again, right? They're going to remand me to custody immediately. They're not going to send me to the prison like that's 15 miles from my house. They're going to send me to Supermax in Colorado. So all these things are running through your head. I turn, I give my wife a big hug and a kiss, and I tell her it's a verdict. And she's just ashen. Give my son a hug. And then we go back and we sit here. And right as I'm sitting there and the judge has come in, sitting down, we're waiting on the jury to come. My attorney leans over to me and he squeezes my knee and he says, Chad, I just want you to know I did everything I could do. And I was like, oh my gosh.
That's not comforting.
No, sir. No, sir. Oh, at that point, I had resigned myself to this is it. This is not going to end well, right? Mm-hmm. For him to say that is he knew it was kind of a crapshoot. Because you're in LA County, man. It's cop hating central. This judge is a leftover Obama guy. You have every liberal in LA County on my jury. So, so we just wait. And so now the jury door opens. The jury starts walking in. We all rise, right? Jury walks in. Every other time that the jury had walked in, they look at you. You'll make eye contact with two or three or four or five of them. They'll glance over. You don't make like no gestures, but just they make eye contact with you. Not one made eye contact with me. And their heads were like all down like this. And I was like, it's like the curtains coming in like this at the end of the show. And, fudge, man. So anyway, they get there, they hand the judge the verdict form. He's flipping through the pages like really fast like this because he's got to do all my pages and he's got to do all the Prince's pages. And you can tell it something was up.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
And he hands it back to the clerk. We the jury, the above entitled action, blah, blah, blah. As to count one, deprivation of civil rights, civil code, XYZ, da, da, da. We the jury find the defendant, Chad Kenneth Jensen, not guilty.
Oh, yeah.
Dude. Oh, just my heart exploded. And then she read through the rest of them real quick. And then, man, I just had to sit down. My knees couldn't hold me up anymore. And I was just crying, dude. I had just tears. It was like type crying because all this emotion is just flooding out of you. And I remember they finished Prince because they read Prince after me. And I remember Nicole sitting right here and I leaned over to her and I go, is it all over? And she said, it's all over. And I was like, oh. That was just an absolute feeling that it's just an incredible feeling that you're going to be okay. And you go from the depths of depravity to the highest of highs, you know? And then we, finished all that up. And the judge, as soon as he freaking dropped the gavel, that dude bolted out of the thing to his chambers like nothing. You're usually, thank you for the jury. You're doing great job. Blah, blah, blah. Negative. That dude just freaking bolted.
You're kidding.
No. So then, the jury responds back to their room. Then we get up. Our legal team gets up. We all hug. Then we're kind of in the foyer of the courtroom, right where the benches meet there in the middle. I'm hugging my wife. My dad's there. I hug my dad, my son. And then a guy walks up to me. Guess who it is that walks up to me?
Who's that?
The father that got arrested that night at the fair.
Oh, okay.
The father of that kid comes up to me to give me a hug. My son just kind of freaking stiff arms him a little bit and says, hey, I don't think now's the time. If you want to meet outside, we'll meet you outside. All right. Which was a solid move on his part. Mm-hmm. So he's like, okay, okay. So then we, we go through all this and then we respond down to the front steps of the courthouse. My attorney says, hey, you cannot approach any jurors. Okay. If they walk out, you can't approach them. If they approach you, then hey, that's your game. You can talk whatever you want, but don't approach them. Okay. It's not a good idea. Okay, cool. So myself, Prince, our legal team, our parents, our families, we're all down by the sidewalk there in front of the federal courthouse and the jury starts filing out. A couple of the jurors kind of break off and go southbound. Through the plaza to a different direction. But the bulk of the jury, like 10 or 9 or 10 of them, just come straight to us, right?
Wow.
And then one juror kind of walks right through us. She was a younger female Hispanic juror, probably early 20s, okay? Long black hair. My wife and I called her the East LA juror because she looked like she was from East LA. But what drew our attention to her was she sat, first of all, she was dead center in the front row, okay? And there were several times that you'd see her going kind of like this, like twirling her hair during the trial. And my wife would be like, oh my God, it's driving me crazy. I don't think she's a cop supporter. I think she may be anti-police, blah, blah, blah. So we kind of had her pegged as possibly a problem juror. And she walked right by us. And I'm thinking, that might be true. So I asked my wife, who is this? My wife's Hispanic. So I said, hey, would you just go up there and see if you can strike up some conversation with her? Just get her opinion of anything. And she goes, oh, yeah, sure. So she goes out to the curb. You see him talking for probably a minute. And then my wife comes back and she goes, dude, we had her 100% wrong. She said, oh, I had it from the beginning that if a cop tells you to stop, you stop. That kid was wrong. And we're like, oh my gosh, we totally, because she was just like, the whole second half of the trial was a waste of her time because I told him to stop. And so that was it for her. But then like a few other jurors came up and talked and gave me a hug and stuff like that. And the jury foreperson came up like at the very, she was like one of the very last ones. And she said, I really, really want to talk to you. I said, ma'am, I am all ears. And she was a middle-aged woman. She kind of had reddish blonde hair. She sat up in the right, top right of the jury box. And for some reason, I thought she was an English teacher, right? I don't know why, but I turned out to be totally wrong. We went back and looked at our notes. And she comes in and she just immediately, she is like, oh my gosh, this was this dumbest thing I've ever seen. You could totally tell the feds were hiding stuff. And it just, oh, it enraged me that they were going to try and send you and your partner to prison for that guy. Mm-hmm. And she said, the fact that they sat up there with a straight face and made, like she said, like when they held up the redacted pages, it just like, are you kidding? I mean, like, is nobody going to say what's behind the redactions? She said, so, and just all the stuff. And, like the 23 second time, she said, that was a big one. She says, and when I wrote down, we want the unredacted state trial transcripts. When I wrote that, it's because we had a juror that was like not going to change his mind. He was not going to vote not guilty because it was 11-1 opposite. Right. And she was like, this is not a hung jury. You're just being stupid. Basically, you're not listening. So she says, watch, I'm going to order the unredacted trial transcripts because we want the whole story. We don't want redactions. We want the whole story. And sure enough, judge sends it back. They are not admitted as evidence and therefore will not be provided. What do you think they're hiding? Well, then, okay, then he changes mind. Now I see what you're saying. He just, with that juror was just kind of blinded by just distrust of law enforcement. And so anyway, we talked, and that jury foreperson, I talked to her every New Year's Eve.
Is that right?
Yeah. I talked to her every New Year's Eve, and I thank her just absolutely for having courage to sit in that jury room and stick to her convictions and listen to that, the spirit of this, what's going on here, and to see through the feds' bullcrap and their smoke and their mirrors and their dramatics. I mean, even in the closing statements of the federal prosecutor, and Jensen punched this child in the face twice, not once, but twice. Pow! Punched him in the face. And I'm like screaming inside. I said, nobody punched anybody. But during closing, these guys are very loose with the truth, right? And there's nothing you can do about it because that's their closing. You can't get up and object. It's not like on Perry Mason. It just doesn't work that way.
A lot of drama goes on in there. It's and I don't know if you know this, but they station deputy U.S. Marshals outside the jury room, one to protect the jury themselves, but also to step in and intervene in fights if they go on, because there's been times I've been in courthouses where you could hear the jury yelling at each other.
Yeah.
So, but that tells me that they're trying to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And obviously this is an emotional deal because some people have strong moral fiber. Some people do. And the truth matters to them. And some people, like my first trial, I just don't think they cared. I'm going to get back to work. All I'm getting is $60 a day for trial. I make $500 a day. I'm only making $60 a day. Here, get me out of here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that cop's got to go. And the other thing, a couple of quick things here. Number one, what was really infuriating was that the judge would not allow our defense expert. Okay. Not only would he not allow our defense expert, he absolutely handcuffed our attorneys in questioning witnesses, officer witnesses from that night. Okay. Like if you and I are partners and you're not indicted and you're coming there as a witness, they could not ask you about your training. They couldn't ask your training about crowd control or distances, what you feel was a safe distance. The judge absolutely said, I will not tolerate any of that. So I got no defense expert. I got nothing about training or tactics or what's allowed, what can cops do and what cops can't do. Because as a jury, think about the 12 people sitting on that jury. All they have to go by is what they see on TV. right? And that's unfortunately what they believe. That's why we have defense experts come in and long form all this and say, hey guys, there's this thing. Okay, this is called the Constitution. This is the Bill of Rights. Okay, there's things inside of these documents. This is the penal code. This is what they can and can't do. Okay. And this is what happens if they do this. This is what happens if they don't do this. And they break it down to where you as a juror, a layperson juror, can easily digest the information, right? He specifically would not allow a defense expert. Mm. And it just was so unfair. He didn't care. And my attorney, like every day before court, they would go in there and fight that fight before. And the judge finally said, I'm not talking about it anymore. You got a problem? Write it down. Submit it.
I've heard the horror stories out of the federal courts in the Ninth Judicial District in California. I've never witnessed that. What I have witnessed in federal court is the judges tend to be more lenient towards the defendants, where in your case, it was the other way around.
Yeah.
But I'm going, well, it's pretty obvious. It's because you guys were police officers.
100%. Yes, absolutely.
Whew. Wow. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Oh, but anyway, in a wrap up for the guy, that father that came in the foyer to try and give me a hug, right? So he's standing off to the side out there, jury. Before the jury comes out, he walks up to me, okay? And he says, hey, I just want to let you know, it was never you. It was never about you. We had a problem with the other officer that night that arrested him and the other guy. We never had a problem. The feds wanted you. This is exactly what he's telling me on the curb right there in front of the federal building. We never had a problem with you that night. And in fact, do you think you could call my son? He really looked up to you because he needs some guidance in his life.
No. Oh, my God.
You're like, dude, I'm listening to what you're saying, dude. I'm tracking what you're saying. But are you kidding me? No way.
Unbelievable.
So,
unbelievable.
Yeah. Of course, then a month later, he's picketing out in front of some television thing or whatever, that his son didn't get justice or whatever. But I mean, and I say there in the book, I actually give him credit and I say, hey, you may be a slime bucket, but I will give you credit that you came up to me man to man and said that to my face. And I give him credit for that. And that's all the credit he gets, but I do give credit for that.
It's just outrageous the way people look at things. And then it's like, oh, I didn't mean anything by all this. If you'd have been gone to federal prison for the rest of your life, that'd have been okay. But you didn't, so that's okay too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I know. It was crazy, man. But I got my gun back, got part of my life back. But my career, like I said, was an uphill battle at that point. When all the work you did for 20 years is all of a sudden hampered and handcuffed.
Yeah. And I want to get into that. So now you've been acquitted, which is absolutely the right decision. No question about this whatsoever. Again, I apologize on behalf of all the good federal agents that are out there for what you were put through, because it was just, talk about a complete waste of taxpayer dollars.
Yeah.
You know, I know people think that's a joke, but you can go back and talk to people that worked for me throughout my career, especially as a Fed. And a lot of the questions when the silliness started, my question to them was, how are we serving the taxpayers today? We take that stuff serious. We don't take the tax dollars and waste them. Not 100% of the people are like that. Okay. So,
right.
But anyway, I just want to put that out there. But now you are going back to work. You've got your badge back. You got your gun back. You're ready to go back out and serve the citizens of Pomona again and the outstanding manner that you have throughout your entire career. You now have a new police chief who was deputy chief, I think, when all this started. And I believe he made a statement that he would be behind you 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Is that right?
So, yeah, when right before the state trial started back in 2016 for the juvenile delay or obstruct, right before that started, the channel of 4 News ran like an 11 o'clock news flash, right? Like clickbait. It had the video from the fair, the fuzzy video from the fair. And I remember my wife calling me and she says, hey, I think you're on TV right now. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? Yeah, I think that fair thing maybe from last year, right? Looks like you. So, and again, this is way prior to any indictment or FBI, anything. This is just it shows on 11 o'clock news the day before I go to the state trial. And I got my own opinions about why Channel 4 chose that day to air that, but that's, I'll save that for the next book. But we, the next morning I go into work and I sit down with the deputy chief and I said, "Hey, did you watch the news last night? Channel 11? Did you watch it?" And he goes, "Yeah, I watched it. Yeah, there's nothing there." I said, he says, "You were on and you were off." He said, "I would defend that 7 days out of seven. You did nothing wrong. You mix it up with the cops at the fair, and that's what happens." Boom, golden, no problems. Great. Again, the IA had already gone through, all the other admin insight had gone through. So everything was above board. And we know that when you look at a video, it's a certain aspect and it's one dimensional. And it's, so we know that that snippet of video is not going to tell the entire story. So anyway, but yeah, 7 days out of seven. So I come back to work and just a quick thing on my way home from the second trial, right? After the exoneration, not guilty, blah, blah. We're driving back in LA traffic back to my house. I get a call from the internal affairs lieutenant at my department. He says, "Hey, I just got off the phone with the IA guru from LA County Sheriff's, the guy that teaches internal affairs investigation class, right? Because our lieutenant called him because this is an abnormal case. It's not every day that you get an officer that's federally indicted and trial and all this." So he calls the guru and says, "Hey, what do we do with these guys now?" And his response was, "Were they exonerated?" "Yeah." "Well, then get them back to work. They're not guilty. You got to act like this didn't happen." And he tells me that on the phone. So now my expectations are through the roof. I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I'm going to get back to work. I'm going to be on patrol next week, man. I'm going to do patrols where I belong. I love patrol. I'm so excited to get back. It's been 2 years since I've seen the inside of a black and white." And so then I come to work that Monday morning, the following Monday morning after the weekend, and sit down with that IA lieutenant, and then we're waiting on the chief to come in, and chief shows up an hour later, and we sit down with the chief, and I'm like, "Okay, chief, well, I signed my paperwork reinstating me and all that, gives my gun back, my badge back, my ID," and so I'm like, "Yeah, well, just rip ready to go, chief, ready to go," and he's like, "Yeah, I'm just not ready for you to go back to work yet. I'm just not ready for it." What am I supposed to do?
Exactly.
I don't know. "Go find something for him to do," tells the IA lieutenant. "Just basically go find something for Chad to do." So they go park me in a corner upstairs in a conference room with a computer and said, "You know what, man, just surf the internet or something, or go find something to do." It was insane. And I am I'm sure you can tell by my talking, I'm an intense individual at times, and my motor is always running. I can't sit still. I got stuff moving all the time. And for me to sit still is like a silent death. I can't do it. So they sit me up there and they tell me like, "Hey, we're working things out right now." And I'm like, "Well, what happened to the phone call I had on Friday where you said, 'Hey, act like it never happened.' What happened to that?" "Yeah, well, the chief's the chief, man. You know what I mean? It's what he wants to do." So they left me there, and then it just started getting worse and worse and worse. And what makes it worse is all of the friends that you work with, your compadres, your friends that you work with, even just your coworkers, every one of them comes up, "Man, dude, I'm so proud of you, man. I'm so happy for you. I was crying when I heard the verdict. I'm so happy, da 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 da." And then it's followed up with, Why are they putting you up here, dude? What happened? I thought you were not guilty. Why are they treating you like this?"
Yeah.
"I don't know, dude. I don't know." It's just when you get that from 50, 60, 70, 80 people all coming up and wishing you the best, and then finding, and why are they treating you like this? Why are you not allowed to go back to work? Because the IA has been completed. Everything's done. There's no reason for you not to go back to work. So anyway, it just got bad. And then Niederbommer's trial came that April after mine was January. His came in April. He came back. And at that time, our department was built in the 50s, right? The building was built in the 50s. So there was a lot of asbestos in this building, right? So Cal OSHA said, you know what, city of Pomona, you need to get rid of the asbestos now. So they have to vacate the second floor of this building, right? And it's a huge building. All the detectives and admin are on the second floor. So they have to move everything from the second floor of the police station down to the basement of the library around the corner. So they're thinking, well, shoot, we don't want to have to do background investigations on the movers. Chad, Mike, and Prince, they're not doing nothing. We'll just have them move.
Oh,
yeah. So there we were. Prince is lucky. He kind of was able to finagle some stuff to go out and work narcotics in an undercover position. So he did help a little bit, but then he was able to catch a lifeline and go out there. So there was me and Mike Niederbommer for 4 months moving furniture up and down the elevator, down to storage, over to the library, shredding thousands of files that had gone to microfiche.
Oh my gosh.
And it was a clown show. And then they had that chief ordered another internal affairs investigation to be done. Reference the same thing that it's called like double jeopardy. Like we've already investigated it. Yeah, but we're going to investigate it again. Yeah, but like my attorney went in and argued, like there was no new information gleaned at trial. There was no new information. Everything that was at trial, we already knew. So there's
called for this second investigation?
The chief. Because for one reason, because if he can say that I'm on internal affairs investigation, he'd put me on ICE. That way he doesn't have to deal with me, because his thing was his Facebook profile meant more to him than anything in the world. So to have that chief of police Facebook, he did not want any negativity. You know what I mean? He didn't want to have to go out there and actually do his flipping job, which was go out there and say that this has been adjudicated in a court of law and they were found not guilty and they were exonerated. They are now police officers and they're 10-8 in my city. That's what a real chief would do. But no, not this guy. You know?
Absolutely.
And so it's such a lack of courage that is so evident here. But we do this investigation, this secondary investigation. Some retired lieutenant from Irvine PD comes out and interviews me. And I'm sitting there and I'm telling this guy about working at the LA County Fair. I'm seeing him scratching his head like, what? Really? Like the fair? This is the fair. People act up at the fair? Like, yeah, dude, this is not Irvine, bud. This is Pomona. It's a working class city. We have a huge gang problem here. So anyway, I was able to finally convince that guy and fully explain to him the mechanics that went down that night. And everything came back not sustained, except for one allegation. One allegation was unknowingly omitting factual information from a police report. Because you know how I said, my mistake, I only wrote like a 2-paragraph report that night. Right? Because it was a nothing. He said, when you testified in court, you testified that you put your hands up in a stopping motion to push the crowd back. You didn't allude to that in your report. That's not in your report. I was like, yeah, but respectfully, guys. And again, I didn't get to after the findings came out, you don't get to talk to your investigator. He's down the road, right? He's gone. So now I'm in at my, they're trying to give me 2 days off for this, right? 2 days of unpaid leave. And they're trying to shove this down my throat. And I'm telling the guys, I'm like, hey, listen, first of all, a report is not evidence. A report is used for you to refresh your memory, right? We've gone over this. You guys know this. I said, if you had to include every single item in a police report, every report would be 100 pages, right? It'd be too long. It'd be tiresome to read. So anyway, they're like, hey, listen, you know what? Tell you what, man, you can just take the 2 days and we'll work it into a pay period with some overtime. You'll never even feel it, right? So at this point now I'm fully pissed off because the deputy chief, new deputy chief, and that IA lieutenant are sitting in there. And I don't know if you ever experienced this, but I've been a cop with you. On the streets, when we're both brand new cops, I've been a cop with you since we got out of the academy. So don't sit here and tell me to eat a sandwich and say I'm enjoying it. I'm going to take these 2 days and I want to serve them tomorrow and the next day, right? Because I want this off my back. I'm done with it. I don't care. So then I walk out of the office sometime later. That IA lieutenant comes to me and he goes, hey, just talking to the chief right now. And he would really appreciate it if you would Skelly the discipline. Did you guys have Skelly hearings? Are you familiar with that at all?
No, I read in your book, but I'd never heard of it.
Yeah. A Skelly hearing is just basically where you feel that the punishment doesn't fit the crime. So you're going to go appeal it to the chief of police. Well, who do you think gave me the 2 days off? The chief of police. So it's kind of a stupid situation, but that's law enforcement in California. So, he's like, if you Skelly it, what we'll do is we'll just ping pong it back and forth between your attorney and the chief secretary. We'll ping pong it for like 18 to 24 months. That way the chief doesn't even have to address it because, if it's under, you know, if it's Skellied, it's not eligible for a FOIA request, right?
Oh my.
Because a FOIA request would absolutely expose all the crap that's going on where this is all was all above board, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I say no. I end up Skellying it with the city manager. And that city manager was the only person at the city and department level that was actually a good person. That was a good Christian American because she was the one that when we got indicted, she kept us on the payroll. She kept our insurance benefits going. She kept our paychecks coming. And that was a stroke of very, that showed character. She believed that you were innocent until proven guilty. Right. So when I go in and Skelly to her this ridiculous charge of unknowingly omitting information, it's an oxymoron. It's stupid.
It is. But,
and my attorney basically came out for the first 5 minutes. My attorney just laid this all out, how ridiculous this is all. And she goes, okay, all right, I'm done with that. Chad, tell me how did you end up here? What, tell me about this whole federal thing. I don't know anything about it. I mean, I know it occurred, but I've been in the dark and I'm going to tell you, brother, you could have knocked me over with a feather because that was the first person, the chief of freaking police didn't even sit me down and go, Chad, tell me about how it went, dude. How was it at trial? This was the city manager. I mean, I had met her throughout my years working with HR and training and stuff. So I knew who she was and she knew who I was. But for her to sit there and literally ask me, tell me, how are you feeling? What's going on? She was genuinely interested in how everything went down. So we spent an hour in there and then went over that whole thing. And then, you know, probably what, a month later, I get the notification that she reversed all discipline. She just wrote a note on there. Please be more careful in writing reports. You're a corporal and people look up to you. And I was just like, thank goodness, dude. So, but yeah, I mean, and Badge Under Fire, I go in. You read how in depth I go with that portion too. That's a pretty heavy portion because another patently unfair period that it's just, you have this one guy standing on your neck for no other reason other than his own Facebook likes because he doesn't want to do his job and go out there in public and risk somebody going, oh, you brought back a guy that was indicted instead of being like, anyway, I could bend your ear for 2 hours, but I'm sorry.
It's absolutely not leader. It's not a lack of leadership. There's absolutely no leadership there. How many times did he come to the courthouse during your trial?
Not once.
Not once. How about the executive staff of the police department? Anybody show up?
He had the IA lieutenant came out a couple times. And I think another IA investigator, I think he had somebody there virtually every day, but it was just kind of like a merry-go-round of who it was. But yeah, those I think were just for updates, but yeah, no, he never came out, never. It is what it is. And you can't make people be something that they are not. And at the end of the day, he was not that person.
Well, it's like you said, the easiest thing in the world for him to have done was, after you've been exonerated, is to come out to the public, be transparent about it and say, okay, we thought this was completely out of line to start with. It's now been proven that nothing happened here. My men are back to work. the citizens of Pomona. You're fortunate to have him back here to work with you. And then his boss, the city manager, who proved to be an upstanding person with lots of integrity, she ended up backing you. Where could he have gone wrong? Can you imagine the amount of respect he would have got from every police officer in that department?
100%. But you know how it is. You get to lieutenant and above, you lose your brains. You just, yeah. And your spine drips out of your body and you lose your brains.
You know, and yeah, there's so many stories that go along with that.
Oh, yeah. And then, yeah, like my last day, we'll get into that down the road. But yeah, that's another one. That's a big one.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I want to get into and ladies and gentlemen, what we're going to do is Chad has agreed to come back for a third part for this week. So that'll be tomorrow. And we're going to get into initially, we're going to talk a little bit about PTSD. He lays it out in his book, but it's something that you need to hear. How he dealt with it, I think, is remarkable. Your family, I refer to our families as an unsung hero. They're remarkable, especially your wife standing behind you 100% throughout this whole thing. Doesn't sound silly, but people ask me, what is it I want people to remember about my career? The only thing I want is that if my colleagues and my family were proud of me, I've done my job. So it's a big deal, right? It's a huge deal. So not only are we going to talk about that, but we'll get into other things. We're going to have our rapid fire. Got some good little topics here that Chad's willing to put up with my silliness to go through again. Yeah. So Chad, thank you again for joining me a second time. And thank you for agreeing to come back for a third part tomorrow, brother.
My pleasure.
I'm not rushing, but I see the ice cream truck driving down the street here. If I run, I can catch him. He really is driving down the street. But I'm kidding. So if you hear that music in the background, it's not worth playing some silly music here. But everybody, thank you folks so much again for joining us for part two. And please come back. You know, I don't run many part threes anymore, but this is important enough to have a part three. There's still more things that we can all learn from Chad's experience, and he's willing to share those with us. So this is I'm thinking of your book should be like a primer for anybody thinking about getting into law enforcement, because it's not all holding hands, singing songs and kumbaya. I'm telling you the things you go through.
Yes, sir.
So like we always say, until tomorrow. Oh, sorry about that. God bless you. We'll see y'all folks tomorrow.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.